Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we're joined by Harini Bapathy, partner in Fryer Levitt's Life Sciences Practice Group and expert in pharmacy law, counseling a variety of pharmacy providers and their relationships with pharmacy benefit managers, otherwise known as PBMs. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much, Brian. I'm really happy to be here. Like you said, I'm one of the partners here at Fryer Levitt, deal mostly with pharmacies and their relationships with PBMs. That could include audits, network access issues, terminations, et cetera. And been here in this space for about 10 years, and a lot's changed. When I first started at Fryer Levitt, I almost said PMBs instead of PBMs, and now everybody knows what a PBM is. And so it's great to see the landscape changing and the knowledge just expanding for everybody.
Awesome. Yeah, totally agree. So today we're really going to be discussing the PBM audit and where pharmacy businesses can look when potentially facing them. More specifically, we'll be looking to add some necessary nuance to the complicated world of PBM audits, especially within an environment, kind of like you said, that continues to debate upon PBM's place in the greater drug supply chain. Obviously, a lot going on in this space that no matter what, it always kind of seems timely for discussions like these. So really, to start us off today, can you explain what a PBM audit is and what signs should pharmacies look out for to anticipate if one is coming?
Sure, absolutely. And it's really important that all pharmacies really understand what a PBM audit is. It's essentially a review on network pharmacies to just ensure that they're meeting their terms and conditions under their provider agreements and their provider manuals. They're intended really for purposes of preventing noncompliance, fraud, waste, and abuse, et cetera, but they're really used for the purposes of generating revenue for PBMs and then, of course, a disproportionate basis to justify network termination. Audits can take several different forms for pharmacies. That could include on-site audits, desktop reviews, prescription validation reviews that are usually just day-to-day claim reviews as well as invoice reconciliations, and then full-fledged FWA investigations with consequences that really range from, of course, monetary recoveries, oftentimes with an audit fee on top of that monetary recovery, leading to network termination, and then even escalation to regulatory agencies as well. In terms of what signs pharmacies should look out for to anticipate an audit coming, we often call them audit triggers, at least here internally, and that's what we try to educate pharmacies on as well. These could really range for pharmacies. They could include being just located in a heat zone, which is essentially a CMS designated zone where there's more potential for FWA. We often see these in major cities. Sometimes PBMs have their own designated heat zones as well, often neighboring towns or cities to major cities that just generally get audited more often. And then those pharmacies know that's about to happen or could expect it because when they're about to credential into that network as well, they usually have enhanced credential requirements, including on-site audits. So it often happens that pharmacies in heat zones just get hit with regular audits just a bit more than other pharmacies. It could also be that they have had past audit findings. And so even if they've been minor, they could expect another future audit of themselves as well, just to see if there's patterns of billing inconsistencies or just patterns of discrepancies that could be alleged on more of, again, a pattern, and certainly to compound them. Other audit triggers could just be like a higher number of claim reversals, the biggest being like outlier dispensing practices. For example, that could mean that you're dispensing a lot more medications in a certain therapeutic category. It could mean that you're servicing patients that are significantly farther away from you if you're a retail pharmacy, especially. And that applies to prescribers too. And the reason is because a lot of PBMs think that retail pharmacies are just those that service their local patient population. And so when they have these parameters of what a retail pharmacy or definition of a retail pharmacy is, and pharmacies start to go a little bit outside of those boundaries, we often see that becomes an audit trigger or reason to review the pharmacy. We'll also sometimes see audit triggers or just audits increase whenever there's a change to provider manuals and agreements, just to see if pharmacies are otherwise keeping on track with the compliance of those related terms and conditions. But yeah, audit triggers, certainly there's a lot to keep in mind. And a lot of the times PBMs don't tell you what's triggering an audit either. And you can tell based on the type of claims that they're reviewing or the questions that they're asking what might have led to the audit. But aside from it being just a general routine audit, there's not much visibility as to why an audit starts.
Awesome. Perfectly said. Yeah, I really appreciate you really laying the groundwork for what they are and when pharmacies can't anticipate them. Obviously, this is just one facet in that PBM pharmacist relationship, but it's so complex. It affects so many different pharmacies in different ways that, and it's a must know for pharmacy businesses to, like you said, avoid some of those pitfalls, which we'll definitely get into. Speaking of that, is network termination the biggest concern when pharmacies go through a PBM audit? Or are there other potential downfalls to keep in mind when like preparing for them?
Yeah, sure. Though that's a great question because a lot of the times what we'll see is pharmacies ask, oh, it was a smaller dollar amount. Maybe I didn't want to really consider challenging it, et cetera. But network termination is certainly one of the biggest concerns. Like I said, beyond the monetary recovery often associated with that PBM audit. I say that because a $5,000 audit could lead to a network termination, and a $500,000 audit could not. Sometimes it's just the underlying discrepancies themselves that really could be the point of issue, not so much the monetary amount for the PBM. Sometimes they've already recovered the money. They might think, okay, there might not be further action against the pharmacy that's needed, et cetera. But really, network termination is the biggest concern, certainly. And then pharmacies, of course, should be concern about the escalation, like I mentioned, to any regulatory agencies, with state boards of pharmacies definitely being the most common. Also, for some pharmacies, network termination from one PBM's network might not affect their bottom line significantly. Sometimes some folks say, especially for smaller PBMs, oh, that's just 5%, 6% of my total revenue. It might not be worth challenging much more, but it could certainly create more of a cascading effect. For example, pharmacies might need to disclose that particular PBM's termination to other PBMs. That could happen just out of general proactive disclosure requirements that PBMs place on you. Or especially at the time of recredentialing, we often see questions like, have you ever been terminated from another PBM's network? That would essentially require an affirmative response from the pharmacy. And that could also cause that PBM that's asking the recredentialing question to also look into the pharmacy a little bit more closer, audit the pharmacy, et cetera, and find similar reasons or basis of termination that the original pharmacy, the original PBM that sought the termination did as well. And on a more practical level, the reason that we'll see a lot of pharmacies challenge PBM terminations is just the general reputation in communities as well. You want to be able to say that you are a pharmacy that accepts all payers and all insurances, and that all patients are welcome there. And so we'll certainly see that affect their relationships in the community, especially with prescribers and patients as well. And we're always of the mindset that you'd certainly want to challenge a PBM termination, whether, of course, individually or with assistance through counsel or a third party, et cetera. I'd say it's really important to challenge network termination. But of course, underlying all of that is challenging any and every PBM audit, regardless of the dollar amount.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. I appreciate you obviously touching on kind of my question, but also the importance of challenging, because I guess I wouldn't have originally thought every single PBM audit could be challenged. But yeah, it's a lot to consider for pharmacies when they're going forward with these. Awesome. So really want to look at audits on a grander scale within the PBM pharmacist relationship, and then kind of move towards some of the ongoing developments that pharmacists might be a little more familiar with right now. So, with significant talks about predatory PBM practices and reform for some of the industry's largest players in this space, where do audits fall in line with the rest of PBM, known PBM practices? And in other words, maybe to kind of dumb that down a little bit, are audits used to improve operations in the drug supply chain? Or do you think they're just another PBM tactic for generating greater revenue?
Yeah, I'd say it's a combination of both, but certainly to generate greater revenue. And that's not just generally for the purposes of generating revenue from audit recoveries, but also generating revenue from the patients that they could otherwise get from pharmacies that they decided to terminate over those baseless audit results. Right, very rarely are discrepancies in PBM audits related to actual issues of overpayments to pharmacies, which is really what the purpose of an audit is. It's to be able to identify, yes, non-compliance, but hey, did we pay the pharmacy more than we should have because they did X, Y, and Z? And very rarely is it an actual issue of overpayments, right? So oftentimes we'll see discrepancies being alleged over super hyper technical reasons, like a signature log looked like chicken scratch, right? Which I can tell you my signature looks like chicken scratch versus a real signature. But of course, no one's taking the time to write out their name or sign it to look like that when they're just picking up a quick prescription. or the pharmacy purchased the medication a few months prior to the window that the PBM would otherwise accept, right? So again, those are an actual issues of overpayments to the pharmacy because the pharmacy did in fact purchase the medication, had a valid prescription, and dispensed the medication to the patient. But because maybe the signature wasn't exactly what the PBM wanted, or the purchase wasn't exactly in the same window that they wanted, they would otherwise allege, hey, there's a discrepancy, seek monetary recovery from the pharmacy, and then potential network termination as well, right? And so while, yes, some audits are used mostly to generate revenue for the PBM, and of course, that's a revenue stream for PBMs, it's certainly to be able to limit their pharmacy networks as well, and then use those audits to consider steering patients really to their, sometimes their wholly owned pharmacies. The PBMs will send out notices to pharmacies that get terminated saying, hey, your pharmacy that you usually go to patient is getting terminated. So patient, why don't you go to these three other pharmacies? And it's not a surprise if one of those is a wholly owned pharmacy for that PBM or one of their mail order pharmacies as well. We see that there's certainly tactics and reasons as to why audits happen beyond just generating revenue in a more straightforward manner.
Awesome. Yeah, that was very well said. It's pretty fascinating to me, like outside of the legal and pharmacy realm, to see how much of a domino effect these can cause. And if termination happens, then this happens. And it's very interesting and definitely rings true to a lot of the scrutiny that PBMs have garnered over the years. So kind of looking toward the future and the crux of like why everyone's talking about PBMs right now, the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2026, or how a lot of people know it as CAA 2026, served as milestone legislation for the future of PBM pharmacy relationships. How do you think PBM audits in the future will be impacted by this legislation?
Yeah, and that's a great question because there's certainly a lot of scrutiny around PBMs right now. But I will say that I guess when we're speaking about PBM audits of pharmacies in particular, while CAA doesn't necessarily federalize the on-ground conduct of PBM pharmacy audits, right? Especially issues of notice to pharmacies or look-back periods or extrapolation or appeals, meaning that the audits that PBMs otherwise initiate on network pharmacies, those mechanics and I guess those terms and how PBMs should otherwise initiate and conduct those audits related to PBM audits on pharmacies still largely remain governed, I'd say, by state pharmacy audit laws and integrity laws, as well as the contractual terms that are identified in PBM provider agreements and manuals. But what CAA 2026 does do is really put PBMs under new recurring audits by both plans and federal overseers. And that upstream scrutiny could certainly cascade down, I'd say, into PBM's review of network pharmacies. And so while it doesn't necessarily affect how a PBM audits a pharmacy, it could certainly affect how they otherwise decide to audit pharmacies in the future. For example, knowing that a PBM could be audited themselves by plans could cause more scrutiny on their relationships with pharmacies and cause PBMs to otherwise monitor their networks for compliance with their own terms and conditions, especially in the course of an audit. But it could also question whether or not PBMs are actually truly passing any of those overpayments that they collect from pharmacies back to their own clients and plans as well. And so that will certainly be something I expect to come about as well, right? Because the expectation is that when a PBM does an audit on the pharmacy, they're taking this money back from the pharmacy, but then the question is, what are they doing with it? And so they should really be passing it back off to their clients. And so I think there'll be greater visibility as to whether that's truly happening.
Awesome. Yeah, I very much agree. And I appreciate you laying the ground for, again, it seems like a lot of domino effect type things happening. The big thing with CAA 2026 was contracting terms, stuff like that. But then there's other factors going into legislation, looking into the PBMs becoming monopolies, all that stuff, them owning pharmacies. It's not directly correlated, but it could be, like you said, that domino effect. And definitely, as far as reform goes, we'll see how this transpires and then how that will then start new reforms and new legislation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's kind of just two more questions here, talking about some other developments and then wrapping it up for what pharmacies can be looking out for a little bit more. But aside from CAA 2026, what other provisions or developments do you have occurred this year or pretty recently that might affect the future of PBM audits?
Yep. Like I said, there are certainly a lot of states that have pharmacy fair audit laws in place, and there's a lot of states that continue to introduce new bills and then strengthen existing laws as well. And in recent months, we've also seen really successful challenges to violations of those fair audit laws that states already have in place. For example, I think it was back in February that we saw Rhode Island pharmacies were actually successful in challenging some unlawful audits that were being conducted by Prime Therapeutics, actually, in violation of Rhode Island's pharmacy fair audit laws or their audit act, which was introduced and really put into place for the exact purpose of protecting pharmacies against those types of unfair and predatory audits. And so the greater that pharmacies learn about the rights that they have under those relevant laws in their state, and of course on the federal level as well, including those pharmacy fair audit laws, as well as any willing provider laws, the better of a position they are in to challenge those types of wrongful audits and potential network terminations. The other thing is that there's always changes happening to provider manuals and agreements on a contractual level as well. And so it's really important that pharmacies always keep in mind and keep on top of those changes as well. Oftentimes we'll see pharmacies say, "Oh, my results said final. There's nothing else I can do." Some states actually say it's okay if you receive final results. You still have 30 days, for example, to challenge those audit results, and that the PBM should be giving them an avenue to do that. There's also dispute resolution provisions in your agreements as well that allow you to further challenge those audit results as well. So there's certainly ongoing legislation, of course, and existing legislation to protect a lot of rights for pharmacies, but there's also a lot of contractual administrative rights that pharmacies have as well that they should certainly make sure that they're keeping on top of or being educated about.
Awesome. Perfectly said. Yeah. I really appreciate all of the insights you're sharing. You talked about what PBM audits are, what pharmacists can look out for, and how that all spills over to the current developments between pharmacies, PBMs, and even the awareness aspect of it all. Like, all of this is equally important, I think, as far as like sustaining pharmacy businesses going forward. Just one question for pharmacies to take this and go forward with. What resources are available for pharmacies to help them reduce the risk of poor audit related outcomes? And where should they kind of begin if they have reason to believe an audit is looming? Like, where do you think they should really start if they're not really well entrenched with kind of the ideas of how PBM audits really go?
Yeah, that's a great question. Especially because in the last 10 years, I haven't seen PBM audits slow down ever. And so, knowing that, pharmacies should certainly tap into, I'd say, the many resources that they have available to them. This could start as simple as, I'm not going to say Friar Levitt's audit checklist that we otherwise put out to pharmacies, but it's a very simple, basic checklist that just identifies pressure points that we often see, at least as a firm for pharmacies. But it could also just include seeking really internal compliance efforts as well. For example, pharmacies should really develop their own policies and procedures when they first start their pharmacy, or even at some point that they realize that there's a compliance risk that they should otherwise implement policies and procedures. They should start there and then, of course, have regular training and staff. Being trained on those policies is really important as well. And a lot of the times, those policies and procedures could be developed, like I said, internally, but really they could. There's a lot of external resources always available to them. The internet is vast. I mean, there's a lot of content out there as well. There's third-party compliance experts. There's, of course, lawyers that otherwise are really experienced in this space as well. There's articles, there's podcasts, right? There's webinars. There's a lot of resources that pharmacies have, I think, if they were to be able to just start there into understanding what compliance resources they otherwise have without, yes, without putting perhaps the cost out there of worrying about expending those resources to then get compliance resources. But the biggest things that I would say for pharmacies are really to just do regular self audits, right? That could just mean identifying some pressure points. Okay, you know that some patients aren't paying their copays. I think that's an issue. Maybe we should strengthen our copay collection policies. Okay, I think that we're accidentally purchasing from unlicensed wholesalers. Okay, let's catch ourselves before we get too far into that. And let's try to make sure we're purchasing from accredited wholesalers if we need to, licensed wholesalers, et cetera. So doing regular self audits is one of the biggest ways that pharmacies internally could certainly catch any issues in noncompliance even before an audit comes up. And then, of course, like I said, you also have the external resources available to a pharmacy as well. But just regularly reviewing a pharmacy's compliance against not just State Board of Pharmacy rules and regulations, but of course, PBM terms and conditions is really important. And I think I say this a little too much, but it's always better for pharmacies to be proactive rather than reactive. So it shouldn't just be in the event of an audit. It should just be from day one. This is how their compliance in their pharmacy just works.
Awesome, perfectly said. Yeah, that especially the proactive versus reactive kind of thing that applies to a lot of areas, not just within pharmacy, but healthcare, but especially me learning more about PBM audits. This seems like the perfect kind of place to implement that.
Yeah, I definitely say it way too much.
That is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. Awesome. So yeah, that I really appreciate you joining me today. I think we could probably dive more into this for hours on end, but I think we really tackled a lot of the key takeaways and key points to really help PBM audits are affecting pharmacy. So I really appreciate you joining me today.
Now, of course, thanks for having me.